Okay, the title is The Tracer Transport in Soils and Shallow Groundwater, Model Abstraction with Model Tools. And the authors are listed here. It's Andrei Guger and Tim Gish from USDA, Alex Yakirevich and Michael Kuznetsov from Ben-Gurion University, Martinus Vanginokten from Federal University of Rio, Jirka from Riverside, and Thomas Nicholson and Ralph Cady from US Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And Tim Gish is here. Tom Nicholson is here, Rain is here. Well, as you can see, it's quite a motley crew. And the question which kind of united this group was, well, if you have a site which is presumably well studied, how can we use modeling to improve knowledge about the subsurface? And that's the site. It's in Beltsville, Maryland, 10 miles from the White House. Essentially, the site is called OP Cube, which is Optimizing Production, Economics, and Ecology. And it's four fields which are bermed so that each field essentially is an independent watershed. And it's very heavily instrumented, and we'll talk about that. But what we were able to get there, there's quite a bit of remote sensing work with NASA, University of Maryland, on the management of within field variability, plant stress, and precision ag, essentially. The atmospheric monitoring, the carbon sequestration, pesticide volatilization, there will be a poster by Tim about that. Plant water use, riparian buffer research on the carbon sequestration and wetland ecology here, and also water and chemical behavior, which was quite heavily attended by various companies and universities and units, and it's water, chemical, microorganism movement, environmental protection, and so on and so forth. And the instrumentation is shown at the left, and it's a lot of multi-sensor capacitance probes there. It's quite a bit of groundwater wells. Runoff flumes are in the edge of each field, and we have the refrigerated water samples on the creeks. We have pesticide flux tower, meteorological station here. So it was quite heavily studied, and there was the ground penetration radar applied. And one interesting thing which came out of it, it was this subsurface structure which exists under these fields and transports water. And the existence of this water was indirectly supported by the data on the corn yield, which is here measured for already 12 years, I guess, monitored. So if you go farther from this network, you're getting lower and lower yield as the graph in the lower part of this slide shows. And this is the multi-sensor capacitance probes, which are go up to 2 meters. And they collect information each 15 minutes. So it's quite a bit of information. Now. So what we've been doing there, it's in experiments, data analysis, and modeling, it's EDAM, it's not that cheese, to understand the site-specific flow and transport processes at this site. So the experimental methodology was the tracer experiments with some preliminary modeling, and flow caused by both precipitation and controlled irrigation. We were able to put irrigation there. And the modeling methodology was the model abstraction, which is systematic simplification of the complex Bayes model, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more. And the data analysis methodology here was always event-based. So event definition from the soil moisture monitoring. I don't have time to talk about that, but it appears that if you really want to define the event of groundwater recharge or infiltration, that's the best source you can go to. So we had more than 10 such as EDAM projects at this site, and one of them is this example, which I'm going to talk about. So we are looking at the lateral tracer transport in variably saturated soil and groundwater. This is shallow groundwater here, but it exists most of the time of the year. And here is the plot at which you would apply tracer, either with irrigation water or in dry form. In this particular case, it was irrigation water. And you put it down to the groundwater through the unsaturated zone so that it will move both through the variably saturated soils and groundwater. Specifically, site where it was done, and the setup doesn't look very special. So you do have multiple capacitance probes, You have groundwater wells here on the way of this flume moving. You have runoff collector, and you have multiplexers to write down everything you can observe. Now, well, it appears that since we are working at a smaller scale than the site actually was studied, we had to do a little bit more research here. And first we started with this, we coupled SWMS2D, that's the program which Rina and Jirka published, with FEM water to see whether we will have runoff there. And this sandy soil, so we shouldn't. But it appears that we could have quite a bit of runoff if we do a lot of infiltration. And therefore, we put the runoff collector here, and we also limited the amount of irrigation water we applied. And then we went into the, we did the ground penetration radar here, and we've got the better feel of the restrictive layer for the infiltration, for the water. And we also were able to see where the wells we are going to put will go. Another thing we had to do, and it appeared to be useful, was the electric resistivity monitoring. So we didn't do it once. We do it practically each 2 or 3 years to see whether we have subsurface structural units that will conduct water essentially differently, and the solid, of course. And here are different dates, but if you look at this date, it's 10.03, this is 10.17, this is 10.31. You have this persistent zone where you have the low water contents, and then you have other zones where you have quite a bit of change. So essentially, we could predict that we will have blobs of soils, and we're looking at a large scale here, that will not be very hydrologically active, and there will be zones which will do this. And the third thing, we had to do the field hydraulic properties monitoring. And so we monitored the water content and moisture pressure. And we were surprised to see quite a good water retention data from the field data. So we didn't have much jumps, and we were able to distinguish between these different depths in soil. So the model obstruction is the technique we try to apply here. And what it is, it's a methodology for reducing the complexity of a simulation model while maintaining the validity of this model with respect to the question that the simulation is being used to address. And this is one of the methodologies actually which formed this modern trend that we can see almost in all sciences of using several models in complement, not using a single model. Now, the complex model is the top 10 about them. You don't need to be David Letterman to figure out what these top 10s are. So first of all, the results are incomprehensible. And that's true for many subsurface models. The predictive ability of overly complex models is really limited because you need to parameterize them. The results of the complex model cannot be reproduced by others, so they can only be believed. And it's difficult to communicate. You really, it's difficult to explain a big model in 10, 15, or even 1 hour. Complex models are difficult to parameterize. In many fields of science, there are ample examples that you have models of strikingly different complexity and at the same time giving you more or less the same accuracy. Another side of this is that a significant part of our knowledge of the world is actually low resolution. We don't really know the world in details, but nevertheless, we do some kind of, we have some judgments. Both the insightful strategy analysis and the decision support usually require simple models, and that's what is actually used. Now, the exploratory analysis of modeling results requires low dimensions, so you don't vary too much parameters. And complex model may create a bottleneck when used in multimedia modeling systems. When you have a set of models set together and there is one which runs forever, then the whole system is doomed. So why we may need it? And really, if you have the base model already, you do have your model, it can be calibrated, why to abstract? And there may be reasons for that. One of them is that these models may include descriptions of processes that cannot be observed well. You can have the description of, say, preferential flow, but if you didn't observe it on your side, then you can't tell anything about parameters. Creates an acceptable uncertainty in the key output. It propagates error in some undesirable way. Has an acceptable demand for resources in multiple simulations. Produces inexplicable results in terms of the key outputs, and we observed it several times. You have a complex model, and you just don't understand what these things do. too complex to be explicable and believable for the users, and is intended to be discarded in favor of preferred simple model. So there may be reasons for it. And what we did at some point, we went to see what kind of model abstraction, what kind of model simplification techniques actually exist. And it appears that there are many of them and people are using them. However, they are different in different fields of knowledge. So we went to see what people are actually using in surface and subsurface hydrology and soil science in our fields. So we found that there may be a fairly simple classification. You can abstract the model structure. You can use hierarchy of model. You can limit the domain of input. You can change scale. You can use meta-modeling. You can use abstraction of parameter determination using Pilli transfer, scaling, or discretization. And there is the publication reference where these techniques are described in details. I am not going to go into details now. But I would like to present one example. Hierarchy of models in flow transport simulations. It goes to Altman, Susan Altman from National Lab. If you look at this media, starting from here, discrete fractures with matrix, and then it's simpler, simpler, simpler. You can go to dual porosity, then to equivalent matrix and fracture continuum. And you go to the set of parameters that you need to parameterize this model, use them. That's where the simplification goes, and that's where the model abstraction is going, in the direction opposite to the complexity. So there is some kind of process which we came up with, and you need to justify the need for the model abstraction, really explain why you're going to do this, review the context of the modeling problem, and that's the interesting thing when you begin to look at the site and see what kind of things can preclude actual simplification. Set applicable model abstraction techniques, simplify the base model in each direction. And there are some statistical criteria you can use. Not always, but in some cases, when you're going to simplify the model, you really can use statistics. So that's how we set this design of the system. So what we were going to do, we're going to start with the complex model. We were going to calibrate it. And then we were going to simplify parameters, just use Pilli transfer function. Now, in these directions, we are going to use 3D variably saturated soils, 2D flow and transport groundwater, and 1D. So we're going to decrease dimension to it. And also we were looking at layered soil, or maybe we could use the single soil material description. This is 3D flow and transport model, and it's the Hydros 3D software, which is came up from Yirka and Rien. And what we found out here, first of all, only manual calibration is possible. It's really a time-consuming thing to work with this. Textural differences that we saw, they generally reflect differences in traits of transport velocities. And the calibrated model could reproduce arrival times, more or less, but not the breakthrough shape, and not the maximum concentrations that we were observing. So that's the breakthrough in different wells which were installed here. Now, let's go to the 2D situation. So what we're doing now, we're dumping all the tracer to the groundwater. This stuff moves only in groundwater. And first of all, we have automatic calibration here. And what it clearly shows that we do have preferential transport. So if you use the same values of the effective porosity across the simulated wells, and those are the wells, and those are the wells in the corner of the irrigation plot, you can see that different values of this effective porosity, which is substantially smaller than the actual porosity you could imagine for this one, would work for different wells. And this basically clearly shows that these wells might lie in the areas with a different effective porosity, and fairly small, 0.2, 0.3. It's not 0.4 you would expect of this sandy soil. But if you just almost arbitrarily divide this area into two zones with different effective processes, then you're getting much better in terms of the breakthrough. So we are really getting closer to the understanding where we are. Now let's get to the 1D. This is the donut, if you wish, which was formed after the irrigation. So the tracer was moved out of the plot or set on the border. And then we just thought, okay, well, let's use CXFIT software, which came from Rien and his co-authors. And let's try to fit each breakthrough individually. So we found that transport velocities to wells differ, so at least four times. The fastest transport occurs to the two wells, the 10 and 12, and solid experiences the lowest dispersion and the weight of the well 7 and 8. And it, what it essentially tells you that there are some kind of tortuous pathways which are situated in individual more or less hydrologically active zones. So in summary of this, what I would like to say is that we definitely saw that there is an exclusion of a substantial part of the soil from the active solid transport process during these 4 months of experiment. And it's important consequence of the soil heterogeneity of this site. The calibration of other zone models is much more trying than calibration of the groundwater model. It's trivial, but it's important to know. We could characterize the subsurface to obtain the correct arrival times and to obtain a reasonable approximation of concentration maximum and the center of mass position. Now, the available software was generally adequate for simulations, and it was almost adequate, but when the soil was filled with water during the heavy rains, we had problems with any of these three pieces of software. Now, the more general representation of solid transport in terms of integrated properties may be needed in order to provide a more reliable and accurate representation with models. What it means, essentially, that, well, we say, okay, we can change the model, but we can we want to fit the data. So we simplify the model to fit the data, but it appears that it would be a good idea to have a simplification of data too, so that these two will match. And how to do this, it's something to consider. And this project generally, I think, demonstrated the usefulness of model abstraction in simulations of flow transport in variably saturated subsurface. And wherever a multi-dimensional, multi-process representation leave room for several competing conceptual models. And that was the case. For flowway transport, the simpler models that retain the most essential features of those representations can provide meaningful insight. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Yakov. Any questions to Yakov from the audience? Questions?
Jan has a question.
Yeah. So how do you see how parameter uncertainty weighs in relative to model complexity?
Say again.
How do you see that model, that parameter uncertainty weighs in terms of the, how complicated your models can be?
Well, there is a uncertainty related to the parameters and uncertainty related to the concepts, conceptual uncertainty of the model, right? So if you put aside the conceptual uncertainty, that's what we're actually fighting here with, because we don't know whether we should use the whole porosity and use some kind of convective dispersion situation, or we should just upfront discard some of the soil volume. But let's suppose we selected one way to do it. We selected conceptual model. Then we are left with the uncertainty of parameters. Now, the only way we evaluate uncertainty of parameters, we calibrate them and we look at the results of the calibration. Right. And in this particular case, there is a good set of recipes that Mary Hill from USGS set in 1997, I think. It's still valid. It's a good set. And the way we were using this set of recipes was that if, according to your constructs, parameters were not reliable, then we probably should be going to the simpler model. So that was the outcome.
Yes?
Is this model abstraction case specific? Or generic?
Depends what you what is case specific.
Well,
if you are looking at,
for example, you can only apply to one side, cannot apply to
other
sides.
See, the model abstraction is the set of rules how you simplify the model. Okay. As soon as you decided on it's essentially site specific. So you look at your site. And you see what kind of processes you want to work with. And then you see what kind of tools or ways are available to simplify them all. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Jakob.
Thank you.